wonder-working power in the precious...
Incredible as they seem, are not the results of mass hysteria.
You may wish to adjust the dial you're currently tuned into.
The wrong station. April, 1996. Internal memo. Bicker Bomstadt Incorporated. Acquisitions. Need to ask you about something in the books. Shell company we bought last year for spare parts. Says in the holdings info it has properties in Calborne, British Columbia. But I'm not seeing that on any maps. Haven't gotten anywhere calling the provincial registry either. Typo, or am I missing something? 1983. The only remaining first-hand account of the Calborne incident. A debrief of one of its survivors, identified only as G.L. It was a normal morning. I'd just seen Mary at the fruit market. We were catching up. I was excited to tell her that Juliet was walking now, and that Susan and Mark were going to come up and bring her for a visit next weekend. After that, I started walking down Main Street. I had to drop by the bakery and do a few other errands. It was a bit past 10 when it happened, I think. It's hard to remember exactly. I'm not sure whether I felt it or heard it first. Maybe both at the same time. There was this huge booming sound that must have come from the west, out over the water. It started off quiet, but got very loud, very quickly. Everything was shaking. Then I felt this kind of wave of air and sound. It knocked me down, and when I got up there was broken glass everywhere. My ears were ringing, but I thought I heard car alarms going off and people yelling. And then I saw it. This bright light, way out on the horizon, burning white with streaks of sparkling orange-red and purple-green. I was so confused. I knew that it couldn't be the sun because of where it was and because of the overcast, but it was so bright and so beautiful that I stopped thinking about that. I just watched those whispering streaks of light and smiled and felt like everything would be all right. A report from Lieutenant Frederick Halstead, 11 hours following the incident. Initial survey of the affected area shows moderate structural damage to the buildings closest to shoreline, more superficial damage to those further up the main road. Efforts have been more focused on the human side and assessing impact there. Few casualties reported in the town so far, and debriefings are currently underway. More trucks will be needed for relocation. Survey of the facility more dire. Widespread, possibly irreparable, structural damage across several sublevels. Human impact unclear at this time. They won't even give us clear numbers on how many people work down there. Further investigation will continue throughout the night. Men reporting high levels of heat and poor air quality. Making a request for special equipment. Some of the men, a not insignificant number, are reported showing signs of hallucinations. They have been isolated and are being monitored for further symptoms. I may amend the number of additional trucks I've requested. An internal memo from the Calborne facility director, 9 minutes following the incident. It got out. We need to contain this. "1869. A letter from Lord John Gormandy II to an alluded-to friend in the newly formed cabinet. My dear John, how long has it been since last we spoke? Your ministerial duties must keep you preoccupied, certainly, as my business concerns do me. I write to you with a most exciting proposal, one that would surely benefit our fledgling federation in all those spheres where it might find concern. Trade, security, advancement in this swift age of industrial motion. A proposal which I am certain our Honorable Prime Minister would find interest in, if you can find an hour of day to present it to him in which he is unencumbered. I have spoken of this before, and remind you that I am prepared to provide the initial capital. The land, the transportation, I leave to you. My best to you, Rosie, and to your wife. Your friend, John. 1871. Gormandy to Minister of Finance Francis Hincks. I thank you for your wise support of my recommendation, Mr. Hincks. The newly confederated British Columbia is surely the ideal location for the Dominion's wing project. Its distance is just the thing to ensure there is both privacy and little risk for political distraction. I've also found that the current instabilities at play within its economy make its officials most amenable. 1873. Gormandy to contacts within the Liberal Party. I must confess, sir, that this Pacific scandal revolts me to my very being. That private interest has triumphed over public cause is a blemish your opponents shall not well endure. As I am certain you support me, and I am certain, I emphatically ingeminate my support of you, which you shall come to understand materially in short order. Dominion's wing is well underway. It is only the transportation of the project's lifeblood which is delayed. We must have rail to the west, and soon. 1885. The private journal of an unnamed conductor, seized by government officials. Making a delivery, it seems, from Upper Canada to BC shortly after completion of the Canadian Pacific Railway. The train, along with any uncleared staff aboard it, it seems, are decommissioned after the journey. It's not safe, what we're doing. Not right. As far as I've heard, they haven't even driven the last spike into the ground. And this thing we're transporting, it gives me a queer feeling. Hotter than the engine feels, but without the sweat. Don't like not knowing what my own cargo is. And the boys, some of them tell me they hear things at night. I tell them not to mind. That will be done soon. 1886. A letter from Sir Henry Lewis Calborne, founding board member of the Dominion's Wing Project, and its first facility director. Lord Gormandy, it pleases me, as I hope it shall please you, to inform you that we have made the final trek of the journey from Granville to the site without incident. We did need to hire a few rough men to aid in guarding the carriage, but none of them survived to see our final destination. Banditry is still rampant in this province. Construction of the facility has gone precisely to your instruction, it seems to me. We all await your arrival with great anticipation that you may see for yourself. I dare say you'll begin drawing up some ingenious expansions the moment you do. Hogan has told me of your plans to dig into the ocean floor itself. A most inspiring vision, my lord. Would only our technology advance with the same alacrity. 1931. Confiscated outgoing letter from facility staff to an unidentified associate. The old bastard finally kicked it, and it turns out he left everything to the corporation. Now it's a fire sale just to keep the project afloat. I wouldn't touch any of the stock options, but any of the land and physical assets should hold their value and then some. They really are desperate. If you come in at the right price, you could walk away with a pretty piece of rail infrastructure. 1937. Correspondence between the Erebus Foundation, Dominion's Wing Board, and government affiliates. It is with regret that the Erebus Foundation will be ending its partnership with the Dominion's Wing Project effective end of this year. While our board appreciates the trust placed in Erebus in providing the highest quality equipment and refurbishment, and most of all in the very involved endeavor of the Calborne facility's undersea expansion, our leadership no longer sees the project and our relationship with it as financially responsible. And furthermore, 1944. Internal report following a security breach at the Calborne facility. As for how the man entered the facility, let alone made his way to containment, I cannot say. Security Chief Bailey will need to answer for that. We don't know exactly where he's been and exactly what he's done, but I assure you we are in the process of finding out. Our staff found him just past 5 a.m. this morning, wandering through the halls. Eyes burnt out of his skull, mumbling to himself about, "Das schönes Licht, Das Schönes Licht. One positive thing I will note is that it's clear the Germans have no idea what we're doing down here. If they did, they'd have sent their man in with protective equipment. Well, fine. Two positive things. This also gives us a chance to observe an exposed subject over the full period of deterioration. Normally, when there's an accident, we put the poor bastard out of their misery. But I don't think anyone will mind letting the kraut cook. He's already exhibiting lesions and muscle waste. Hard tissue keeps building up in his empty sockets, before becoming soft again and squirming away. And he just kept mumbling about the light, I believe it was, until his tongue shriveled up 2 days later. I'll have a detailed report for you soon. 1821. Private letter from Lord John Gormandy I to his wife. I've been informed of a most curious thing that may require my immediate attention. You'll remember, Margaret, that we are deep in the earth now, deeper perhaps than anyone in these territories has ever known. I'm told the men have discovered something, something that burns them without flame and whispers in their minds without words. Mad ramblings, I'd have thought, but Maycroft himself attests to it. Surely even this wild country has not yet impinged a disciplined mind such as his. No, I must see to this myself. We are on the precipice, my love. The mine must succeed with all we have staked to come here. And with the dubious legality of our locale, I must quash any risks and roadblocks myself, and with haste. I shall see you soon. Yours always, John. It spoke to me, Margaret. Not with words, but I felt its meaning, its intent. Truly we are blessed by the Lord God in heaven. The men, even Maycroft, think it unnatural, alien, that we should leave it buried in the earth. They do not hear the words as I do, and as you surely will too. It gives heat even now, without coal, without wood, and I sense that once stoked with such traditional sources, it shall double the heat of whatever we give it. It means to give us this output, my darling. I sense it. Imagine what we could do with such a marvel. Our legacy would be secured. Everything will be all right. 1853. Gormandy to Gormandy. My son, only you can put a stop to this madness. For too long I have indulged this creature, while indulging my own vanity. It is only with the spiritual fortitude granted me now, near death's door, that I speak with clarity for the first time in years. Were the men not enough? The men I watched wither and die after they carried it into our home? The skin sloughing off their frames in the weeks that followed? The men who shoveled coal into the furnace, who I locked in the basement as they spit up their guts and spasmed on the floor, then had laid beneath the bricks by their successors? Was your mother not enough? Who wandered the halls at night, driven mad with the whispers. I warned her not to catch its eye, that it had grown too powerful. But this house of death was too much for her to bear, and now it has taken her too. There is no promise, my son. It brings ruin. It gives nothing. And now I hear it again. Sleep. Sleep. I wish to sleep. God in heaven, forgive me. May 1996. Internal memo, Vicar Bomstead, acquisitions. I looked around. It might be interesting. From what I can tell, they were working with an early approach to nuclear energy, some proprietary form of fission reaction. But then they got completely outpaced in the 50s and 60s and tried to pivot to something, anything to make this energy source useful. At the very least, the equipment could be useful. We'd have to move everything to Ontario, though. The facility itself is unusable at this point, even if we wanted to truck people over here. And we don't. They already tried having their little toy town, and now it's gone. There is one thing they've got down there, though, that I do think we really want to get on the books. They couldn't figure it out, but I know we've got people in R&D who could take a good crack at it. I've got a good feeling about this. October 1996. Internal memo, Vicar Bomstead. Acquisitions. Need to talk to you, or anyone, ASAP. We were digging in the area, about 300 meters northwest of the facility. Found some docs mentioning the location. Thought it might be some off-site assets. We found bodies. Buried. At least 200, probably more. All of them shot, Greg thinks, by FNC-1s. Need to send this up the chain. Might have bitten off more than we... 2003. Internal memo, V.B. Kane. Research and development. I think we need to pull the plug on this project. There are real diminishing returns on the energy this thing is making, and the headache if it gets out? Not that I think it wants to get out, but right now we're edging it, and it might burst any time. I know some people on the team think it's sentient, but like I've said before, it's more like a cross between a lightning storm and a horny teenager, and you can't... 2014. Press release from Kane Group Limited. We are thrilled to be working with the Ontario government on this new energy initiative, providing clean power for the province, for the nation, and for our friends across the border, all at a fraction of the cost. Unidentified date. Internal communications. I've seen what close exposure will do. Accidents, power surges. A lot of it is just unavoidable, really. But what you have to understand is that, as it has amassed an incalculable amount of energy over the years, and grown, if you will, the effects of such exposure have become much more severe, and progress much more quickly. 10 years ago, you would have been terminal within 24 hours. 5 years ago, you'd have 6 hours. Now, well, you've seen what happens now, though in their cases, over the course of 10 minutes. For those a bit further away, it's hard to say. The side effects have always been proportional to both distance and how direct eye contact is. I'd say Manitoulin is fucked. Probably Sudbury, too, for anyone who happened to be looking the wrong way. Even Sault Ste. Marie is iffy. And us, well, that's hard to say. We were underground, but obviously very close, and there's 100 other factors. But let's just say, best case, I'd give us... unidentified date. Testimony at Closed Doors Tribunal. Yes, I shredded documents. Memos, reports, statements, letters. It all had to go. And we had to document everything we were getting rid of so someone else could make sure we did a thorough enough job. And then that documentation was going to go in the shredder. Which is when the doors got kicked in. Do I regret my part? Partly. I'm dying, and I need to make sure my family is taken care of. But yes, partly still. Of course I do. But it was just one small part. You see, I read some of those documents as I was shredding them. Not many people left alive at that time, you see. Not many people left to look over my shoulder. And sure, it should have ended 5 years ago. Or 10. But it also could and should have ended 40 years ago. After Calborn. You know, Calborn? Calborn, British Columbia? No. Of course you don't know it. It doesn't exist anymore. And not because it was blown off the map by some fucking industrial accident, but because of you. That breach in 83? The Calborn incident? It was 5 kilometers off the coast. And you'll remember, the thing wasn't as powerful then. It wasn't consuming 40,000 megawatts every year. Given the distance, given its size at the time, those people in Calborn wouldn't have died right away. No, they would have lived normal lives for years. But you couldn't let that happen. Because they saw it. So you can thank me for shredding documents. Because we all know you would have done it yourselves, given the chance. Just like we all know that one of these days you're going to find that thing again. And bottle it up. And tell yourselves you'll find some good use for it, and that it's all for the common good. Maybe that would be it deluding you. But probably, it'd be you deluding yourselves. You sunk too much into it, you see. Far too much. And that's the only thing worse than death, isn't it? Waste. Unidentified date. Unidentified entity. Internal communications. I had my doubts, but that old Erebus stuff still works perfectly. found it a few hundred clicks off the coast and canned it. We should give things a few more months to cool off, but after that, I think we're looking at one hell of a quarter. The Wrong Station is made possible with the generous support of our listeners on Patreon. Visit today at patreon.com/thewrongstation. You can also support us by leaving a rating and review on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever it is you tune into the show. This week's episode, The Kelborn Incident, was written and performed by Anthony Botello. Thank you to Weredevil, Andy Witt, Bradley Faust, Levi Parks, Cortez Gray, Isabel Ferrer, Amanda, Cosmomo, Gator, and a very special thanks to Bailey R. for helping us keep the lights, well, off. The Wrong Station is co-produced by Alexander Saxton, Anthony Botello, and Jacob Duarte Spiel, with music composed and performed by Alan Citrin, and arranged for the viola and performed by Viola Schmidt. You can follow The Wrong Station on social media, at The Wrong Station, and email us at thewrongstation@gmail.com. And until next time, thank you for listening.